We got our man Joseph is sticking around. We've got some good information. Glenn Tate's on hold. He'll come on interesting topics. Good to be with you, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just now joining us and you don't know where you are, you're at the Power Hour, thepowerhour.com. So good to be with you. Thepowermall.com, of course, our site for the great products, the heart drops being the most profound ever. The Strauss heart drops, fantastic. Thepowermall.com. Joseph, you were giving me some statistics during the break. I always love when you have little tidbits of information. Just go ahead and throw some of these on us and let them waft over us.
Well, first of all, I want to say is, you know, in the 1970s, gold went up 24 times and silver went up 38. But I think in the bigger picture, gold has gone from $35 in 1970 to approximately $1,750 so far in 2021. So if you go back to 1970 at $35 up into where we are today at over $1,750, you had gold go up 50 times in 50 years, Daniel. Few people realize that. Couple that important fact with the fact that the dollar, as you know, has lost 90% of its value since 1950.
Am I going to have to get a bigger wallet, or I don't think we're to a wheelbarrow, but am I going to have to get a wheelbarrow to go buy some bread here pretty soon? I mean,
it may not be a bad idea.
Take a backpack just in case. All right, go ahead. I know you got some more statistics about houses and things. I find these fascinating.
Well, what's important when you talk about the number of ounces of gold and silver needed to buy the average home before taxes, I did the research on it, Daniel. 1975, it took just 465 ounces of gold to buy the average home before taxes in America. But interestingly, by 1980, it only took 85 ounces. By 2001, it was up to 834. By 2011, it had fallen down to 135. And currently now in 2021, it's approximately 235 ounces of gold. But I think when we talk about the number of ounces of silver needed to buy the average home before taxes, very interestingly, 1980, it took only 1,464 ounces. By 2011, it was up to 5,521. And currently, in 2021, we've got 15,319 ounces of silver to buy the average family home priced at 416.
So
we can see how cheap silver is when you talk about what it had purchased in prior decades.
Is this telling me that, like you said, is silver and gold cheap, or are homes overpriced, or both?
Homes are overpriced, and gold and silver relative to that is dirt cheap.
So... What are you predicting for the, you know, mid to near future here? Home prices accelerating, going down?
The bull market in precious metals is alive and well, and I think the long-awaited correction that everybody had wanted to end is now over. And I'm looking for a breakout in gold and certainly silver to follow to significantly higher prices in 2021 and beyond. So I don't think it's too late to get into gold and silver. I think these prices, when we look back on them, are going to have represented a very good long-term buying opportunity. I think this market's resilient, and I think the downside is very limited.
One of the things, when gold and silver come up, and invariably somebody is going to bring up, rightly so, well, the gold market and silver market is really manipulated and really controlled. And we've been hearing that for years, and it's been obvious that it's been so. Court cases have proven this. I mean, should that scare me? Or what should I think about that fact? Is that going to end?
I think you've got to go back all through history, and history is a very important teacher of what we can expect, certainly in the future as we move forward. I think there's a very important mantra when you talk about manipulation in any market. I've said it and I'll say it again for the benefit of your listening audience. Markets are bigger at the end of the day than any market manipulation that has undertaken what had been going on prior. Eventually, the manipulation will be overwhelmed, and these markets will certainly seek out their true level supply and demand. That's coming, Daniel. That's not behind us.
When that happens, what is there a sign that we should look for? Is there something? When X happens, then get ready. The flood's about to come. Is there some signpost that you see along the horizon?
Well, I think, again, you got to put in perspective. It took 9 years for gold to go from 35 to 200. It only then took 5 months after that period to go to 850. So what I'm saying is when the stampede starts and everybody decides they want to own gold and silver, it's going to be the equivalent of Niagara Falls trying to work its way through a garden hose. Everybody's going to want to be in, and there isn't going to be any gold and silver to buy.
Is cryptocurrencies, are they taking some of the steam out of the gold and silver market? Because, you know, people
have doubt they are, but I think definitely crypto and gold and silver will continue to move to higher prices in tandem. I truly believe that.
Okay, so some of the assets that you think through this next little bit here, definitely the future, the right on our doorstep. You're looking gold, silver, cryptocurrencies. You're looking at farmland, I would imagine. Yes,
yes.
No. What else? Gold, silver, crypto, farmland. What else?
Well, I think you want to look at any form of hard asset because there's no doubt that it's very undervalued relative to the inflation that is now underway. No question, we've got a hyperinflationary cycle underway very similarly to what we witnessed in the 70s. And I think we'll also face what took place inevitably when it's all said and done, which took place in the 1980s. So at some point, we're going to see higher interest rates. We're going to see the ability to certainly come into the markets and speculate, as we've witnessed in the last couple of years, come to an ending. It's going to come down to what assets do you own, how much do you owe on them, and how real are they. That's where we're headed.
Last thought is yours for everybody listening, straightmoneyanalysis.com. Give us a phone number.
386-677-8642.
386-677-8642, 386-677-8642, straight money analysis.
We got U.S. debt to GDP ratio now at 130%, Daniel. To put things in perspective quickly, U.S. debt to GDP in 1960 was 52%.
What is Japan? What's their debt to GDP?
They're higher than ours. They're about 140.
Is that all? I thought they were like 250, or did they correct us?
No, they're about 140.
Really? So we're
yes.
Wow, I thought they were way higher. How high can that go before it's just like, my God, the whole, forget it, we're done?
Can probably approach 200%, but I don't think we'll get there before the bubble bursts, no doubt about it. Got people taking risk in these markets that's unprecedented. I've never seen the degree of speculation that's been going on in these markets for quite some time.
We've been talking about these markets correcting, and all they're doing is stabilizing and going up. They keep pumping money, 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 money. I mean, how much longer can they do this?
Well, I think we're coming to the point where the world is becoming very reluctant to accept any further printing of U.S. dollars. The world is awash with dollars. Everybody's trying to nail down a quality investment that'll maintain its purchasing power. We're seeing crazy swings in art, collectibles. There was an auction just a couple of days ago of Kanye West's 14-year-old sneakers. They bought $1,800,000.
So the people are begging. People have so much. There is so much money around. They're begging for things to buy it with, basically.
Sotheby's auctioned the sneakers. They got $1,800,000. They were worn-out sneakers, but they were Kanye West, so people wanted them.
Oh, jeez. Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Insanity.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. God bless you, Joseph, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me, Daniel. Always a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, take advantage of his offer there for his newsletter. And really, it's super good. Super good. Take advantage, and it'll help maybe make your decisions to guide these. It's time to make decisions. It is time to make decisions. Our next guest, that's one of the things we'll talk about, Glenn Tate. He is, of course, the author of the 299 Days series, a fantastic series, books, educational, fun, all of the above, 299 Days series. He's also the host of Prepping 2.0 podcast, where they talk a variety of subjects, and we'll get into a lot of these today, I believe. Glenn Tate, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you for having me, Daniel. It's great to be on. And by the way, I was listening attentively to what Joseph had to say from my limited experience also looking at these economic things. I think he's spot on. So great guest. I enjoyed listening to him.
Joseph's been around a long time. I mean, we joke that he was there when the first gold nugget was taken out of California rivers. I mean, he was on Wall Street in the 60s. I mean, so for him, he's not theorizing when he talks about these things. He's been around and he's seen it, and we just love Joseph. So great guest. Great newsletter he has, too. We're going to get into a variety of subjects. We talked with Joseph about the housing prices, and I've talked about this a little bit. There's certain states, there's probably, I don't know what the number is, Texas, Idaho, certainly, Montana, Wyoming, Florida, North Carolina, maybe, you know, somewhere. Those states seem to be getting the brunt or benefit, I don't know which, of this migration which is going on in America. Talk about that a little bit, and then talk about your own experience.
Yeah, as far as the migration goes, it is undeniable. Just yesterday, we found out that California lost a congressional seat for the first time in 107 years. And, for example, Montana gained one. Texas gained two. So there's clearly a migration. Census figures don't lie. As far as housing prices, I can get into that a little bit with our experience because we are in the process of moving from Washington State to Montana. I can tell you that the first place we looked at was North Idaho. I was corrected by someone in that area who said it's not Northern Idaho, it is North Idaho. So in North Idaho, called a friend of mine who's a realtor there, very good guy, and I called in December of 2020, and he said, I'm not kidding you, there is zero inventory in the three counties of the Panhandle, zero, and it's been that way for a long time. So it is a huge problem. Obviously, North Idaho is an area a lot of people want to go to. When we were looking for a place in Montana, we found that places were listed at about 6 in the morning, and by about 10 in the morning, there already had been multiple offers, and that seemed impossible. We ended up, through a series of miracles I can describe, ended up with a place that wasn't listed. It was a friend of a friend kind of thing. So it is a problem. Now, I'm not sure it's that bad everywhere. We have at Prepping 2.0, we've launched a website called redstate-realtors.com where people can go and click on a red state as defined by the 2020 Electoral College and find a realtor. And we're not really making any money on this. I mean, to cover the cost of the hosting and stuff, but it's just so people, because everybody seems to be relocating. In my circle of friends in the preparedness community, this is a huge, huge topic, this relocation topic. And we thought we would get some, you know, information out for folks because it's a big deal. When you relocate, you're almost certainly severing your job situation and looking for a new one. Although with this remote work and this Zoom thing, it's a lot easier than it used to be. Well, that's one of the things fueling this, I think.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you that, right, that exact point, because certain areas, you know, are farmlands everywhere in Montana. It's like, what are people going to do out here? Well, it doesn't matter now because they can work from home as long as they got internet or whatever. Talk about that.
Yeah, no, we're finding that out. I'm a lawyer, and I can do everything.
That's okay. We still like you. That's okay.
I know.
We still like you.
I'm a good one. I sue the government for a living. So there you go. Court appearances are all by Zoom now, which is fantastic. I don't have to get fully dressed up and drive in, you know, to some courthouse. I can just wear like a nice shirt and a jacket and, you know, wear jeans or whatever because they can't see it on the camera. So that's a plus. But, no, it can be done anywhere. We're finding that, you know, and there's a flip side to everything I've been saying about the red states. The other side of the coin is that housing demand in the countryside of blue states. So I live in Washington, a very remote rural part of Washington. I can see Canada out my window, right, across the water. That's how remote it is. And there's a huge demand for housing out in the country, so we plan on selling our home for a ridiculous amount of money and taking as much money from Seattle idiots as we possibly can. And it's because everybody can work remotely. And we have an Airbnb, and we run into people all the time. We have people staying a month or 2 months, and they're almost always from Seattle. They almost always have high-tech jobs. They have good internet at our Airbnb, and they have said, and this is especially true last summer as Seattle was burning, and you had the CHOP and all that other stuff, they said, we're getting out of the city for a while. We're looking for a place out in the country. We're taking an extended vacation out here. We can do all our work remotely. One of our guests was literally a rocket scientist, designed rockets, and that went into space and everything. And so – and he could work remotely, right on the water, right on salt water. And so that is fueling it. So you've got this combination. It's kind of perfect for people wanting to relocate from blue states to red states like us. We can sell our house for top dollar. Now we're going to pay top dollar in a red state. That is true. But if you're going from peak to peak, that's not terrible. If you have to sell low and buy high, that's where the problem is. And interest rates are, of course, artificially low right now. And so that makes this all work. So it is the time, in my opinion. Obviously, every family needs to pray about this and think about this. Don't just listen to some guy, you know, you hear on the radio. But I really think this is the time in general for people to leave blue states. I guess there are some blue cities within red states, so maybe that would be a thing. But I'm going to focus mostly on blue states and get to the red states for a variety of reasons. Here's an amazing story. We were moving a load of stuff from Washington to Montana last week, and we're at a rest stop in eastern Washington, just random place. And this guy comes up to me, which normally, you know, if you're around Seattle, that's a pretty creepy thing because there are a lot of weirdos. And he heard me talking, and he said, and Glenn Tate is a pen name. It's not my real name. He said, "Are you Glenn Tate?" I thought, oh, my goodness, this is going to be an interesting conversation. And he said yes, and we talked and everything. He brought his wife over, and they, too, had a pickup with a U-Haul trailer. They, too, were moving from western Washington. In their case, they were moving to Idaho. And what are the odds of that? Everybody seems to be moving. We got in a huddle. We prayed. We talked about how God seems to be. And I'm reluctant sometimes to talk about what God wants because I don't want to be wrong. You know what I mean? I'm a human being, and I'm flawed. But I just have this sense, anecdotal, that's all it is, that God is moving people from bad places to good places, and he has something in mind, and he wants us in safer places.
Wow.
It's profound. I'm getting goosebumps, Daniel. Even every time I tell this story, I get goosebumps. And our fans and listeners at Prepping 2.0, it's the constant source of emails and messages that we get, and everybody wants to find out, you know, well, what have you heard about South Dakota and all those other things? So that's one of the things, as I mentioned, we're doing on the show is we're having a series of video bonus shows where we have folks from listeners from various states, red states, tell us about their states. We're having realtors come on and tell us about those states. And we even have what we call, you know, the blue state help desk. And we just did one of those, and some folks in a blue state got on and said, well, here's our situation. Here's our deal. What do you think some good red states would be? And we kind of spitballed it. So this is a topic on people's minds. And one of the reasons I think it's so profound is that this isn't a little thing. This isn't like people saying, geez, I've always drank Coca-Cola products. I'm thinking about switching to Pepsi. This isn't Ford Chevy kind of stuff. This is, I'm going to potentially quit my job and try to find a new one. We're going to uproot the kids from school if you're not homeschooling. We're going to move. It costs a ton of money to move. We're going to sell a property, which in and of itself is a lot of work and stuff. We're going to buy a new place. We're going to show up in a place where we don't know anybody. These are enormous life decisions, and people seem to be making them with great regularity. And that tells me that living in a blue state is intolerable. And it didn't used to be that way. We were holdouts. We lived in Washington State, Western Washington in particular, for the longest time. And everybody would say, what are you guys doing in Washington State? And we had a variety of answers, and I think they were okay answers. But not anymore. We cannot tolerate a lot of stuff. And the thing that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and I stress there are five or six really big reasons. So here's the one that did it. And it was our son, who's in high school, you know, couldn't go to class last year. And it had a devastating effect. Here you have an honor student, three-sport athlete, outgoing guy, a leader. Everybody loves this guy. And, you know, a couple months ago, until we showed him how awesome Montana was, he was kind of moping around the house. He'd stay in his room 23 hours a day. And the public schools here did a terrible job of internet school. And it was just a disaster. And in Montana, classes, I think, closed for 2 weeks, you know, to actually flatten the curve. Remember all that? And so now he can go to a real class, a real school. He's a football player. They're building a new football stadium because they're having so much growth. And life can go on. He can have an American, you know, high school experience. And it's impossible in the blue states to have that. So that really kicked us over the edge. Of course, there's state gun laws. A large portion of my collection will soon be illegal in Washington State. So I'm going to go to a place that has Second Amendment sanctuary status as of 2-3 days ago. And the taxes are going up. Bottom line is, even the conservative remote parts of a blue state like Washington State, it just seems like in about, I don't know, 5 years, we're going to be just like California. We're going to have the homeless roaming around. Everything that's wrong with California is coming to blue states. It can't be stopped. The only thing you can do is get out of a blue state, in our opinion, and it's worth the sacrifice. Bottom line, every single person I've talked to who has relocated from a blue to a red state has said, boy, that was a big lift, but guess what? Don't regret it at all. Nobody has said, geez, I wish I lived in San Francisco again. I've never heard anybody say that. So
let me hold there, Todd. Can we kill the break? Is that possible, Todd, or is it too late? Okay, we just killed the break. Is that okay with you, Glenn? Do you need a break, or can we just go over through?
No, I'm great. I think it's an honor to have a break killed.
No, let's kill a break. You're a break killer, buddy. Let's go. Let me ask you kind of the same question I asked Joseph. I mean, you're kind of answering this, but what is the main is it everything that's causing this, or is there one specific thing, or was there a straw that broke the camel's back for, you know, you mentioned for you? I mean, is there one thing, or is it just everything? That's it. We're done.
It is a collection of things, but any one of these things is probably reason enough to leave. We had really invested in Western Washington. I don't just mean monetarily. Listeners of Prepping 2.0 will know that we viewed ourselves, and the only term I can use is a military one, as a forward operating base. We had the team. They're described in the books. They're real guys. And we basically—
Are they moving with you?
That's going to be a major bummer with all of this. They're not coming along. They all have, you know, jobs and all that. And quite honestly, they're younger than me, and I don't think they understand the gravity of what's coming. And here's the bottom line. They know that they can just get in their truck and drive over to Montana, and they've got a place, and they've got supplies, and they got everything they need. So they don't really need to move to have an escape plan. So we were kind of the forward operating base, and we viewed ourselves as that. And we figured, given the team and a bunch of other assets that we have, we could make it through, you know, even in Western Washington. And then it just became apparent that wasn't possible. There's the school situation, taxes, everything else. They're going to put in a regional meth treatment facility in our little town. And so we're going to have folks coming in from all over staying, and that's going to be a problem. And so tons of those kind of things. Quite honestly, state law enforcement in blue states, I think, is a problem when you – and I can't even believe that I guess the word's prominent. I refuse to believe that. But when you author a book about the collapse of the United States that is very popular, you get on a lot of lists. And quite honestly, I don't really worry about the feds because obviously I haven't done anything wrong, but I do worry about a politicized state police force. And so I'm much safer in Montana because, I mean, good luck, local, our federal officials. You got to use the local enforcement folks for a lot of your work. And so I feel just safer just being a somewhat of an outspoken patriot, I guess would be the way to put it, in a place like Montana. So the other thing was when I was going to say Trump lost, but he didn't lose. When the Biden regime was installed, I think that's more accurate. That was a shock too. And that was a big thing because my wife and I viewed a Trump reelection, which he obviously was reelected, just wasn't allowed to assume office, as a buffer against out of control state government. And when that buffer was taken away, then it was really time. Really,
it was like Katie barred the door. It was like this is a marker in history. This is, I said this on the radio. The world is different. America is different. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, from this time forward, things will be different. That's what I felt.
100%. And we could see it play out in a variety of ways. We now have, you know, federal gun control, initiatives.
Executive orders. Yeah.
Yeah. Executive orders. This absolute insanity of packing the U.S. Supreme Court, that scares the heck out of me because, you know, then the federal government won't be protecting rights. But – and I'm putting my faith in government, which is often a bad idea. I'll say
– That's not putting, a winning bet. Glenn, that is not a winning bet, my friend,
know,
but go ahead.
I feel like all things being equal, the cards that we've been dealt, I can put my faith in Montana protecting my rights. Everything I've seen so far has indicated that they are. Montana and Idaho and some other states have actually become more red in 2020 than they were in 2016. That's one of the myths, I think, out there. The idea that everybody that moves from, say, Washington or California or Oregon to a place like Idaho or Montana must be a liberal. No, that's not what I'm seeing. Liberals are happy as clams. In Northwest, I guess,
yeah.
Right? Because clams don't have brains. But people are happy as clams, liberals are, living in New York City or San Francisco. Oh, sure, there are these things they don't like, you know, having to step on hypodermic needles when they walk outside. But they'll still be there because they're around their own folks and, you know, they don't have to worry about evil conservatives like you and me, who, of course, pose no threat to them whatsoever. But so I think that people that are, by and large, I mean, the vast majority of people moving to red states are indeed conservative. And we're seeing that in the election numbers with, again, the two states I know of, Idaho and Montana, getting more red. So that it's a profound thing. You know, there aren't many periods of American history in which there's been mass migrations. It's obviously happened, but I'm just saying it's not a typical thing. I mean, it's a once in a generation or two.
This reminds me. This reminds me of the Declaration of Independence from the standpoint where it's human nature to suffer evil or suffer things while they're sufferable. So we're going to put up with, you know, we're going to put up with the government while it's sufferable. But when it's not sufferable, that's, we're at a breaking point. That's America. That's America's. Basically, we're going to sit on the couch until something moves us, more or less. What you're saying is things, they're not sufferable anymore. These states, it's, forget it, we're done, we got to go somewhere else, basically.
Absolutely. And a corollary to that is that I get this a little teeny bit, so I'm not saying this is a common thing, from some of my conservative friends or listeners or whatever they might be, and they'll say things like, yeah, you should stay and fight. You should try to make Washington a livable place. And I get very angry when I hear that for a couple of reasons. One of which is, and people
it's
don't
stupid.
Know my background. Well, yeah, that's a good
it's
one.
It's stupid, number one. But anyway, go ahead.
Number two, I sue government for a living. I have for 28 years fought Washington State. I have quite literally stayed up a couple nights thinking of ways for Washington to save itself from all this bad left-wing nonsense. You know, how are we going to elect judges? How are we going to pass this legislation? I've been a lobbyist for conservative causes. I've done all this stuff. I have been more active in trying to fix a blue state than virtually anybody else that, especially those that tell me I should stay and fight. I've stayed and I've fought. And the people telling me to stay and fight have not done what I've done. There's a limit. Jousting at windmills is a terrible idea. I don't think that's a good use of the time and gifts that God has given me to sit here and what? Like letters to the editor that don't get printed? Oh, maybe I'll do a petition that eight people will sign and, you know, saying, hey, we need to, you know, not have a meth clinic in my town. Okay, thank you very much. There's millions of dollars of federal funding coming in, and that's going to win the day. You know what I mean? So I've done exactly what people suggest. And I guess my point is, if a guy like me who has been this engaged in fighting for liberty in a blue state and who has invested a ton of money and time, we fixed up our place in Washington State. It was amazing. So much time and love and energy went into it. If I'm leaving, then I think everybody should strongly consider leaving because it is indeed that bad. And the corollary is that it is indeed that good in these other places.
Are you familiar with Sheriff Mack et al. And CSPOA and their movement to strengthen sheriffs and communities to protect the Constitution, basically enforce the Constitution through sheriffs?
Absolutely. I love it. I think it's brilliant, and I think it's practical and effective.
I need to talk to you off air about that. I know you're an attorney. There's some stuff going on, and there's some stuff here where I am. We're pushing that. In fact, I'm going to see him soon. And I think it's the only peaceful thing I've heard, because the sheriff is elected. They're connected to the people. They, you know, there it is right there. It's constitutional. It cannot be disputed, the sheriff's authority. It hasn't been up until this point in America. I mean, if they're going to talk about doing that, I mean, we're way past the even talking point if they're going to get to that. But I don't see any other peaceful way. And these communities, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, that you just mentioned, this can play in those communities. I mean, not only play, this could thrive in those communities, I think.
You make an excellent point, first of all, about sheriffs. But the bigger point I think you're making is that in a red state, you've got the background conditions, you've got the political conditions, you've got the decency of the majority of the people there to then use the process to do good things. In Washington State, a sheriff, as awesome as he or she may be, can't do any of these good things because of the rest of the state being so goofed up. In Montana or Wyoming or fill in the blank, red state, a sheriff can actually pull this stuff off because everyone's looking around going, yeah, that's a great idea. Thanks for your leadership. Yeah, I'm totally good with that. And that's the key. You need to be in a place, if it were a field, you need to be in a field where, you know, you can cultivate goodness and freedom as opposed to a concrete jungle where you just got weeds growing out of the cracks. You have to be in a place that is susceptible to good laws, good morality, good behavior.
You don't put old wine in new bottles. I mean, I've had this discussion so much about the public school system, government schools, and say, well, you know, you fix them, you do this and whatever. I mean, I got to the point, there is no fixing it. And I think that's what you're saying about that. Forget it. Why are you bashing your head up against the wall? Go somewhere where people think like you, where you have a chance of your neighbor actually might have a .22 rifle in his basement or something that they actually knows what it is and is fine that you do too. That you're not running around like you gotta be sheepishly guard your opinions and afraid to just even be yourself. Go somewhere else. Just go. Your quality of life will go up. Just who you are. This will strengthen America. That your energy is in a place that can be magnified. I'm so, forget it. Forget those damn states. Forget them. Forget them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, you bring up a good point, and I look at it this way. We've all tried, you know, polite conversation and convincing people, you know, your liberal uncle that maybe comes over for Thanksgiving, and you say, well, actually, 70% of federal income taxes are actually paid by the top 1%. We've tried the polite debate thing. Doesn't work, and it's it's not helpful that Facebook and Twitter and all these other things completely censor that. They don't even let information get out. So we've tried polite debate. Okay, good. That's your first step. We've tried voting, and at least at the national level, I think
we saw how that went. Yeah.
In state and local elections, I think it still makes sense to vote because there's all kinds of, you know, gun control and other things that are on the ballots and all of the – and school things. And so I'm not saying don't vote. I'm saying at the federal level, voting didn't work and never will work again because that fraud being tolerated, there's no going back. And so I think that you're going to have permanent Democrat fraud elections at the national level for the for as long as the 50 states exist as 50 states, which I think is a numbered set of years. So we tried voting. We've tried litigating. And that, of course, is never a perfect solution. And then the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, had the audacity to say that the President of the United States, whose election was at issue, did not have standing to challenge voter fraud that said that he wasn't the president when he was. You want to talk about a guy with standing? It would be the guy whose election is on the line. I get that some political activists may not have standing. I get it. And that was an absolute – I'm mad about this. It was an abdication. It was a once-in-a-lifetime chance for the Supreme Court to do something right, and they punted on it. So we've tried the courts.
Worse than punted. So it's really than punted. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So we've tried persuading people. We've tried voting. We've tried the courts. The only thing left – well, there's violence, which I'm not a fan of and don't suggest. But the next thing that's left, it comes down in my mind to one word, and that's territory. You have to be in a place – where these horrible human beings, and these liberals with their terrible laws and their confiscatory taxes, they just – all you are is an engine to provide money for them and their stupid utopian dreams. You need to be in territory in which they do not have power over you. Yes, the federal government still has power over you. I get it. And I don't have a perfect solution for that, but I'm a
not as much as you think. And you know, if you're in a county, you know, with a sheriff that's operating correctly and these principles, really the federal government doesn't have that much effect on you at all, or shouldn't.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm still thinking blue state thinking, where you know the feds and the state government are all lined up currently, and so you have to be in territory that they don't have these kinds of controls over you. And the only way I can think of, practical way, to get to a territorial solution is to physically move to another territory. Because what you can't do, practically speaking, is say, well, our part of Western Washington is really conservative. We're going to form our new state. Well, it's theoretically possible, but it's incredibly hard to do. So that's not an option. You have to pick up and move. It's come to this. You know, you mentioned Declaration of Independence. I'm sure you know about the first, I guess, unofficial flag of the United States, an appeal to heaven, it said. And
yes.
The idea behind that was that the colonists, and they were magnificently patient people. I can't believe their patience. They tried it all. They did it all, just like we're doing it all. And they finally said, we're making an appeal to heaven. Lord, tell us what to do. We've tried it all. We've carried out your will by being peaceful and working within the process. We all know what direction that went. I think we're at the appeal to heaven stage where objectively, factually, truthfully, we have tried it all. Nobody on the left can possibly say with a straight face, oh, there's one more thing you need to try. You need to try what, recall petitions? What, impeachment? Oh, really? So, okay, where do we get the votes to do that? How do we get a Secretary of State of a blue state like Washington to certify a recall petition? They're going to find a million technicalities. Anyway, I could go into the details that don't matter. We've tried it all. The peaceful solution, and I emphasize the word peaceful, is to pick up and go to a place that will cultivate freedom. It will cultivate you and your growth, your pursuit of happiness. Your family will be better off. You'll be around people like you, and you'll be able to weather the inevitable collapse of the blue states. You're just in a much better place, and I don't know of another solution. I've thought about this topic on and off and written 10 books about it, for goodness sakes, for years, and I don't think I'm missing anything. I don't think there's any really simple solution that somehow I've missed. And oh, by the way, everybody else I've talked to and know have missed. If there was a simple thing like you could check a box on a form and sort of not be subjected to left-wing insanity in a blue state, We would have heard about it,
right? Yeah, that form would have made its way around. There's no question.
It'd be on the internet. Download here, right?
I mean, with all the emails I get, that would have been one of them I would have got. I would have clicked on that one. Let me ask you time is coming. You're a fantastic guest. I want to hear all this, but let me tell you to stay focused just a little bit. Let's shorten these answers because a couple important things.
Yes.
One, you're a lawyer. Let me ask your opinion. I guess we're going to rehash this. I get just for my own curiosity. Texas, Donald Trump had a lawsuit about the election of the Supreme Court. Texas also did. You tell me where I'm wrong about this statement. When the original colonies came together, the states came together and formed the federal government. They created them. The created cannot be greater than the creator. The resolution to this was, okay, if there's a dispute between the states, the Supreme Court would have to hear that case. The only resolution for Texas would be basically, if we don't like what Pennsylvania did, then I guess we have to invade them. They said, no, you don't have to invade Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court will hear your case and you can get a legal, lawful resolution that way. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that not true? Did the Supreme Court not have to hear that Texas case?
You're 100% right. And the Supreme Court hearing, having original jurisdiction, which means you file it there because it's like the court you start with, right? Original jurisdiction over disputes among the states was precisely to prevent states from going to war with each other, having boycotts and doing everything else. Absolutely, the Supreme Court had to take that case under original jurisdiction. Period. End of topic. It's in the Constitution. There's no debate.
Wow, God. I mean, what you just said, of all the things you just said and the picture that you've painted for America and where we are, what you just said is the most saddening of everything that you just said.
Complete abdication.
Yes.
The Supreme Court. It's funny when this was going on, you know, Supreme Court was debating, you know, there's silence from them whether they were going to take it or not. I felt like saying, you guys, you have one job. You have one job, you guys. Do this one thing that you're supposed to do. Forget all the other stuff. Do your job. And they didn't.
Wow. Second Amendment. Let's talk about Second Amendment. Biden was a week, two ago. I don't know. Time flies. Said that there are no guaranteed amendments, and my jaw just about hit the floor. I've never heard a more un-American thing said by a president ever. Your comment about this, court packing in relation to this, anything, Second Amendment.
Yeah, the thing, Biden's statement, there are no absolutes in the Second Amendment, is particularly a stupid statement because of all the amendments or other parts of the United States Constitution that are indeed absolute. The one example of an absolute is the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed. It's the one absolute. And he picked that to say, oh, you know, I can't yell fire in a crowded theater, which is in and of itself bunk, which was a statement that was made. That case that it was made in has been overruled. So this whole fire in a courthouse or in a movie theater thing is not even the law. But even if it were, it'd been overturned. So, and I'm very concerned about the Biden attempts to remove immunity from lawsuits that gun manufacturers have, and I believe ammunition manufacturers. That is the one way to prevent the manufacture of firearms because no gun manufacturer could afford the insurance policies. I think it's sneaky and shrewd. It does not involve going house to house, which, of course, is a terrible idea and I don't think can happen. So that concerns me. And on top of all of this, swirling around, orbiting all of this, is this absolutely dictatorial plan to pack the United States Supreme Court so that they'll get what they want forever and ever. Do the math. I mean, the number that they would appoint and the majorities they have in the Senate, especially if they let more states in, it's impossible to ever undo it. I mean, if any Republican or conservative out there is thinking, yeah, but when we have the Senate and the presidency, we can pack it our way. No, you can't. It's not going to happen demographically, among other things. But even if it could, that's a bad answer. Oh, we can throw it for our guys is not the liberty answer. I hope this fails. I know it failed in the 30s when FDR tried it. He could have done anything. He was the de facto king of America, and he couldn't even pull this off because people said this is such a terrible idea. Now, people in the 1930s were much more moral and liberty-minded than they are now, so maybe he can pull it off. I will say this. If the court packing plan works, I think average Americans who know nothing about the law and the Supreme Court, they will say, this is a sign, not just a sign. This is it. This country's done for, and there's no more saving it. And I think that is the spark of states splitting out of the union, to be very honest. That would trigger it. Gun confiscation would trigger it, and court packing would trigger it. So it's high stakes, and I hope so-called President Biden, as I call him, fails at this terrible, terrible endeavor.
Guns seem to be the American ideal. To me, I've said this a million times, guns are as American as mom and apple pie. America started because somebody tried to take their guns. The whole country started because Britain tried to disarm conquered Massachusetts. You've kind of alluded to it. Is this the issue that will actually get America off the couch and care about the Constitution? And if that is true, why is Biden and whatever agenda they have behind it, why are they so hell-bent after going after this right now? Because this seems like the powder keg to me. It's like, leave it, like, you guys are morons. Just keep doing what you're doing. Stay around the fringe and just eating away at everything else and leave the guns alone. You know what I mean?
You bring up a great point. Yes, I think a lot of people, even on the left, the think tank people and the government people would acknowledge that gun confiscation will kick it off. And they don't want that. And why are they still pushing and pushing and pushing? And this sounds so simple, but, you know, Occam's razor, right? The simplest explanation is often the most likely one. They're insane. They're crazy. They are this left wing nonsense of theirs is a de facto religion for them. And the other thing is, and I've lived in Western Washington. I've worked in Olympia, Washington, you know, which is like one of the most liberal cities in the United States, the state capital of Washington State. It's hard to describe in words. They hate us. They hate you. They hate the listener. They hate your family. They hate your ancestors. They hate what you believe in. They hate everything. And it's not just like dislike or discomfort. Like we make fun of the left and we're like, oh, those goofy Antifa people, right? We don't hate like they hate. And they think that they are stamping out evil because, again, it's a religion. That's the way that they get, I don't know, sanctification or something, is by squashing conservatives. And it's a fervor that those of us, you know, on the right, Christians in particular, we don't understand how politics could be this be-all, end-all driving force to sanctify you and cleanse you and make you a wonderful, wholesome person and all this, because it just makes no sense to us. It does to them. And I think the right disregards the level of hatred that the left has for us when they look at these things and say, now, why are they doing this? It could come down to, and I think it does, something as simple as hatred, and they hate us. So that's what I think they're doing. I don't think there's a huge special interest motive. They get money from Bloomberg and all that other stuff. And yeah, they're a bunch of suburban soccer moms in swing states that think guns are evil. That's not enough. My usual answer is special interests usually drive everything. But I don't think in the gun case the special interests drive it enough. They want to disarm us. They hate us. They think guns are evil. And they want to rule over us so that we can't do anything. It is indeed that simple, in my opinion.
That's satanic, what you just said. You're a lawyer. You're on the front lines of many of these legal battles, especially with government. The Bill of Rights, last time I checked, was absolute. It was the supreme law of the land and end of story. What does the Bill of Rights mean in these courts that you deal in to these judges?
Two answers to that. One is the substantive thing, which is those protections have been watered down. But before we get to the substantive one, there's the procedural stuff. We were talking about Supreme Court and standing. There are all kinds of ways that federal judges can dismiss lawsuits before they ever get a hearing on the merits. There's standing. There's all kinds of trickery and you know, procedural things that you've
never
done. Yeah. Very procedural. A significant portion of the activity in a federal case or a federal judge's day, if you will, of reading things and deciding things are on these procedural things. So that's the number one way that they get sifted out, that, that cases with actual merit get sifted out. Another way, I guess it's related to that now that I think about it, is that you have to hire a lawyer and they're really expensive. And I wish it weren't the way, I wish it weren't that way, but yes, you can get attorney's fees if you win, blah, 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 but that takes 8 years. I used to pay my mortgage based on attorney's fee awards that took years and years to come through. Yeah, it's not a great business model, so not a lot of people can do that. So that's a huge factor. And then you get to the substance, and there have just been all these watering downs. The Privileges and Immunities Clause is a classic example. It's just basically been read out of existence. And so
explain that. Explain it. We got a couple minutes. Explain that quickly. We got.
Yeah. There was a, in the 1860s, the Reconstruction Amendments, there was privileges and immunities. It says if that, that the government can't infringe on a privilege or immunity you have based on state or federal law. And the idea was if a state allowed you to do something, another state couldn't squash it. And the Supreme Court of Slaughterhouse cases about 1870 off the top of my head. Said, yeah, that's just, you know, that's just due process. So it doesn't exist because it's already covered elsewhere. Oh, really? Why did people writing a constitution say something twice in different ways if they didn't mean two different things? So that's an example. If they just read it out of existence, it just doesn't exist anymore. And that's pretty efficient as far as knocking out the substance of these things. The other way to knock out the substance is to have these balancing tests, which means there's like four factors and a judge gets to weigh them and blah, blah, blah. So it comes down to the feelings of the judge. Those are the ways you knock out the substantive rights that we have. And it's been pretty darn effective. I can tell you, as someone who does this for a living, it's pretty effective. I don't win many cases. You don't hear a lot of lawyers say that, but it's pretty doggone hard.
So basically, the Bill of Rights has been massaged and lawyered away to where you don't have guaranteed rights in these courts anymore, or virtually.
Absolutely true.
Wow. There's the music. Glenn Tate, 299 Days, Prepping 2.0. Check out his podcast. It's really good to talk to you. Glenn, a pleasure. Last word is yours, about 20 seconds.
Move to a red state if you're not already there. You won't regret it. You need to do this. Speaking from personal experience, God is indeed guiding us. I think God is guiding others. Obviously, you check on your own situation with God. Don't just take my word for it. Here's the bottom line. When bad things happen in blue states and they don't happen in red states, you're going to have to answer your family when they say, Daddy, Mommy, why didn't we get out while we could? And
well, there you go.
You're not going to have a good answer for that.
We'll leave it there. Your rights come from God, ladies and gentlemen. See you later. Stay there, Glenn.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.